It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
Hello, crew, and welcome to Firearm Friday. I am Chris Dover, and today we're going to be talking with Brandon Langston, who is the lead gunsmith for Galloway Precision. Now, Galloway Precision produces a variety of aftermarket parts that cover the spectrum, anything from a High Point to a CZ to a Smith & Wesson to a Ruger and more. But first, let's talk a little reloading. Anyone who knows anything about reloading knows that Starline brass is the best brass to have. It's no wonder that many boutique ammunition manufacturers choose to use Starline brass. Whether you're looking for common calibers or those little quirky niche market calibers, Starline brass probably has what you need. For more information, jump over and check out starlinebrass.com. So we've got Brandon in the house from Galloway Precision. How are you, Brandon?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm well. Now you're the gunsmith, right? There, the lead gunsmith.
Yes, I'm the lead gunsmith for Galloway Precision. And I also make all of our Kydex holsters and run all our social media as well as answer all the technical emails that come through the shop.
So you've got the fun job, I guess. What you're telling
I do. I jump up and down on Eric's desk to get him to make parts. And then once he designs and makes the parts, I go break them. And then we go back and fix what needs to be fixed where we get it running and then get it out to everybody. So I make all the guns go bang and I design all our holsters. So I really enjoy what I do. It's a lot of fun.
Now, how long have you been with Galloway?
I'll be 5 years in May. Back in May of 2014, he found me at a local gun store that I'd worked there for a couple years and was just burning out on it. You know, didn't pay great. Wasn't horrible pay, but it wasn't great pay. And it was just very repetitive. And around here, it was a new gun store. And where we're at in Western North Carolina, a lot of the older, more established gun stores are just, you go in, buy your gun, you get out. You don't sit there. They're not knowledgeable. They're not, which was a great thing about this particular store, because I helped them when they first opened, and that's what they wanted to become.
Right.
And that is what they became, but then it just became repetitive. There was nothing ever new going on. I mean, and when you're working in a store environment, where when you come from my background, there's really not much you get to do and create, because I mean, right, it's already coming in created. You already have it. Right. So he liked the work I did on the gunsmithing side of things and hired me out and been with him ever since.
Now, what background are we talking about that you came into that with?
Well, I grew up gunsmithing. Mm-hmm. Got a couple in the family, extended family tree. And then when I was 20, I joined the Army. I was an infantryman.
Gotcha.
11 Bravo from 2000 to 2006. And a lot of people go, well, what's that got to do with gunsmithing? Well, you know, you pick up and learn a lot of the machine gun stuff on the fly, but I would also purposely hang out with the armor a lot, because growing up, you know, and I grew up outside of Joplin, Missouri, in a tiny little town called Carl Junction. Mm-hmm. No one's ever heard of it unless you're from Southwest Missouri, and the only reason people know Joplin now is because that F5 tornado hit. But, you know, that part of the country, economically speaking, unless you're a farmer or something or you work in manufacturing, it's pretty dead. So when you get the money to buy firearms, you got to have someone that knows how to work on them. Mm-hmm. Or you learn how to do it yourself. And so between all that, my military experience and things, and then when I got out in 06, I had started working security jobs. And the place I was working at was in Weaverville. It was a rather big company at the time. And again, it was just mind-numbingly boring. And 12-hour shifts at night, just making sure people didn't steal discs or packaging material, because the plant made CDs, DVDs, Blu-rays. That's what they did.
Interesting.
And yeah, that's when I started getting back into it real heavy. It was probably 07, 08. And then I had my own FFL for a while, but when you're your own, doing it on your own, it's with nobody to help, mm-hmm. it gets overwhelming pretty quickly. So that's when I started, went and worked for the gun store, started with them in 2012, 2013, and got back into the smithing side of things real heavy and just kind of took off from there. And now we're doing, when I came to first work for him, I'd say the first 3 months I did 600 or 700 guns.
Wow.
Because at the time it was just Eric and Debbie. They, you know, owned the business. Dale and Jeanette, his in-laws, and then Charles worked for us this whole time. He's now a permanent employee here, but all he handled off-site was the website stuff. Mm-hmm. So Eric was real happy to have someone to bounce ideas off of, someone who had the experience internally with firearms and whatnot, and got us caught up on our backlog, and it's just been going full bore ever since.
Right. Now, I know it's been, I'm trying to remember how long ago it was that, I guess the first stuff I ever bought from Galloway Precision, I think I found you guys through a search, pretty sure it was Google Foo, you know, that brought me to you, and was looking for some modification parts and stuff for a Ruger LCP, and That's been years ago now. So how long has Galloway been around?
Now, Eric established the company, him and Debbie together established the company in 2009, and okay. literally started at their kitchen table. Right. Eric is a mechanical engineer and machinist by trade. His father, Chris Galloway, worked for Square D and major companies and doing fixturing and molding and things like that. He was one of their main engineers.
Gotcha.
For 30, 40 years. So Eric grew up in the manufacturing environment.
Right.
And, but he also grew up competitively shooting. Mm-hmm. So the two just made sense. He saw the Rugers coming out, the LCP. I mean, yeah, I remember when that thing first came out in probably 05, 06, somewhere in there, mm-hmm. 07 maybe. I mean, that was a huge hit, because up until that point, no one had made a reliable pocket 380.
Right.
And I say that there were pocket 380s on the market, but the problem with the 380 is you're dealing with a hard primer round to begin with, mm-hmm. that is low pressure. And so a majority of 380s will have issues with light strikes, feeding, things like that. The LCP, outside of the P380, which the P380 is a great pistol, but, you know, Kel-Tec doesn't shy away from the fact, yeah, it's an under $250 gun for a reason.
Right, yeah.
You know, they're not, it works, it functions, could it always use improvement? Of course. Well, with the LCP came the name. Ruger's very well established, everybody knew, but the thing of it is the moment you pick up a stock LCP, you're like, well, it's great, it's the right size. You know, we have a saying around the shop for pocket guns like that all are for is to shoot them in the gut to make them let go, and then you shoot them in the mouth and make them regret it. And but that doesn't mean that you can't accurize it to where if you do have to engage a target 5 to 10 yards away, there's no reason that pistol shouldn't put all 6-7 rounds center mass, all 6-7 rounds in the face. I mean, there's no reason it can't be capable of doing that. Mm-hmm. Between that and the LC9, those were the first two pistols he designed parts for.
Right.
With the LC9, the LCP, he worked with Ross at RTK Strategic to change his Sweet Pea design, and it's just been going ever since. And then, of course, we, on our end, we have the 13-pound recoil spring set, which really does make quite a big difference in the snappy little pistol, which all 380s of that size are going to be snappy just because you're dealing with 2 inches of barrel. There's not a whole lot of time for powder to burn, so by the time the round's exiting, it's going to have some oomph.
Right.
Recoil-wise.
Yeah. You know,
and then go ahead.
No, I was on the spring. I've got a story about the actual spring. I can't remember now. I'd probably have to go through the website here. That's GallawayPrecision.com, by the way, for anybody out there listening. And actually look at the parts list for the LCP to know exactly what all is in that thing. It's been so long ago now, but pretty much everything you guys offer, I'm sure, is in it. And with that recoil spring, I know that I reload. And so I had just gotten my Dillon 550. And the first batch of stuff set up, the first batch of stuff I run was, guess what, 380. And I had a double charge.
Oh.
And by God, I knew it when I pulled the trigger.
And, oh, yeah, you're going to know. You're going to know real fast.
I contend to this day that spring saved a lot of pain and anguish, both mentally and physically, I think.
Oh, I'd guarantee it, because the stock spring in those is usually between 8 and 9 pounds, which for most people sounds like a lot, but in the physics world, when you're dealing with, because I think people tend to forget, a firearm, you're carrying around what is literally a tiny cannon. You're making an explosion inside a small area to make a projectile come out the end. All right, so in a 380, you don't think anything of it. In the smaller calibers, people don't think anything of it until something like that happens. And then when they can see that, they're like, oh, man, I see why this is now. Because on our end of things, yeah, we want it to reduce the felt recoil. We want it to reduce the muzzle rise, because that, in turn, turns to accuracy. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that's a good case in point story where it can also help with the safety, just in case you do get an overcharge load. And that doesn't just apply to reloading. I've shot stock off-the-shelf ammo. Mm-hmm. Whether, we won't mention any big names. Anyone in the shooting world knows the main culprits.
Right, and especially if you're talking bulk stuff.
It's the stuff you're going to be buying in bulk. It's stuff you're going to go pick up at big box stores for, $50 for 300 rounds. It's not going to be the greatest quality ammo. And but the problem with it is you'll get undercharged and overcharged rounds. So you may get a squib load, you may not. But that's a good story to prove, not only is it going to help increase your accuracy and recoil, but if you do get a hot load, you don't have to worry about, well, what did it just do to the locking block? What did it do to the chassis? What did it do to the rest of the gun?
Right.
Because you're going to have that extra weight to slow the recoil impulse down enough to where it's not beating the gun apart.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that was my thoughts. And I mean, it's good to get to talk to you and actually tell that story and get a little bit of confirmation, because I've always, when I tell people that story, I'm like, Galloway Precision saved me, man. I know they did. But that thing would have The slide would have blew apart, and no telling, probably hit me in the face. And there's just no telling what would have happened. I think about it, and I don't know. I mean, odds are that, I don't know. It may not have been hot enough to do all of that. But I certainly messed my britches when the trigger broke.
Definitely needed new pants that day.
It went from a 380 boom to a 4570 boom or something. it was pretty insane. And interestingly enough, my wife is pretty much taken over and stolen that LCP now. I moved into
I hear that a lot.
Yeah, I moved into the 42. When the 42 come out, and again, soon as it come out, hit up Galloway Precision and got to looking at you guys and said, okay, what do they make for the 42 now? And she about, it's that LCP is sit. It got shot a little bit here and there. I would always break it out. I've got a lot of firearms, and people would come over looking for, hey, I'm fixing to get my carry license, what do you recommend? What do you think? And I'm like, well, come over and I'll lay a bunch out and you can kind of shoot them. And because around here, there's no ranges that rent anything. So I'm like, come over and you can shoot a few, and it'll kind of give you an idea of the size frame you want or the caliber you want or that sort of thing. And so it got shot as far as that. And then my wife, I don't remember if she seen it one day or she actually got to shoot it and play with it or what, but she was She was in a little Taurus 38 revolver, and yeah, she's seen that, moved into that, and she's confiscated it, unfortunately. But it's still running strong. It's still doing great.
So, oh, yeah.
You know, all of those parts and upgrades have, you know, maybe have helped the longevity of that pistol. I don't know.
I'd say to an extent they do, just for the simple fact that the life on these guns is usually around 5,000 to 6,000 rounds. Now, anytime I bring up on service life on a pistol, there are always going to be people that, well, mine's had this many through. Well, I get that. There are some that will shoot more. There's some that will shoot less. But there reaches a certain point in the life of a firearm where you're going to have to start replacing stock parts. Mm-hmm. Now, right. Part of when we go into designing parts is we obviously want it to outlast stock parts. Mm-hmm. Now, we will give, you know, recoil springs, especially if people ask a lot, well, how many rounds before I need to change it? To be quite honest, we've got some of these that we made 5 years ago when I started working here in our test guns that probably have 10,000 to 12,000 rounds on them that aren't slowing down anytime soon.
Wow.
But we still like to give, you know, in all honesty, depending on the ammo and how often you shoot, too, that's a big thing. You know, if you shoot 10,000 rounds in 3 months, you need to change your spring.
Right.
Because yeah. It's going to wear out much faster. If you're shooting 10,000 rounds in 5 years, you got nothing to worry about.
Right.
So I usually with all of our recoil springs come, 90% of them come from ISMI. Mm-hmm. And their springs are rated to last up to 100,000 rounds.
Wow.
So, you know, it really depends. The biggest thing you want to look for is what the material is that springs are made out of. All of our springs, whether they come from ISMI or our other supplier, are all chrome silica. We don't use music wire at all.
Okay.
Music wire just does not hold up to the test of time. Mm-hmm. Especially in today's age of, you've got IDPA, you've got IPSC, you've got 3-Gun, you've got others that I don't even know about, I'm sure. And so people more and more are signing up for 3-Guns, open class IDPA, open class IPSC, where they get to take their carry guns and run them through a course of fire. And people are finding not only does it help them with their skill set and whatnot, and people are more open to training nowadays too. It also helps we have very good trainers out there now, you know, that are well worth the money that they are charging to go train with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so more and more people are getting into that side of things. So our job, on top of making sure that we are increasing performance, is to make sure that it's going to outlast what the stock part would do. And so, I mean, we come across that every now and then where people want to argue with me about, well, I don't think that's right. This is it. Well, yeah, but I'm telling you what a baseline should be.
Right.
And that's it. I'm not saying you have to change it out. If it's still running, you know, the spring still compresses, you get proper, you know, compression, you get proper stretch, you get everything's right, and your voids aren't changing, then no, you have nothing to worry about.
Right.
Don't worry about it. What the numbers that I give to Charles, our IT guy, to put in listings, that is a baseline and nothing more. I mean, we've got guide rods that people bought for the SR and the SRC 7-8 years ago that they'll email me and be like, this thing's still running like a champ. Do I need to replace it? And, you know, all of our guide rods are purposely serviceable, so you don't have to change the whole guide rod. You just change the spring set.
Right.
And so, you know, at that point, if they've been running it, you know, quite a bit, I'll be like, yeah. But if they've only ran 3,000 to 4,000 rounds in that amount of time, now you're good to go. Keep
right.
running.
Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's what you're saying.
Precisely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But for some people, especially with a carry piece, you know, it's for them, it's peace of mind. I know people that they have their regular intervals, whatever it might be, and what that we're talking, whether it's aftermarket performance part or a stock part or whatever, they just feel more comfortable. And I get and I get that aspect too. If that's something that you're going to carry and you're going to have to depend, you know, your life may depend on it and that sort of thing. If you're more comfortable and confident replacing those every couple of thousand rounds because it makes you feel better, they're reasonably priced enough that, you know, it doesn't kill you to do that, of course.
And it's the old adage I use a lot via email and in the videos we do and such. You know, think of it like your car. You do regular maintenance to your car. Why would you not do regular maintenance to your gun? You know, I mean, because I'll get people that, you know, well, I don't know if I need this. And I'll explain to them what something does. And they'll say, well, how often do I have to change it? I said, well, think of it like your car. You change your tires every 40, 50, 60,000 miles, depending on where you live. Mm-hmm. Depending on the tire you get, you change your oil every 35 to 5,000 miles, you know, 3,500 to 5,000 miles. This is the same thing. You know, and there are some people that take it too far. They want, I went and shot 1,000 rounds, need a new spring. That's a little too much. But in essence, that's, you know, why we give those baseline numbers, because there are those people, they do want to change at regular intervals, which is neither bad nor good. It's just the way they do things. Right. And there's things I do that the infantry ingrained in me that I change out on my ARs and things like that every few thousand rounds, knowing full well on the gunsmith's side of my head going, you don't need to change that. The military side of my brain going, change it right now.
Right.
You know, so that's the other part of the aspect where I do understand where people are coming from on that side of things.
Yeah. Now, it seems like over the years, like I said, I mean, that kind of dates what I'm talking about, you know, talking about the parts for the LCP. But it seems like with all of the parts that you guys make first hit the market, there was a lot of pocket pistol stuff. And over the years, you guys have graduated up in frame size, it seems like. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. What we try to do is fill the niche market. What we looked at and what I think was very smart of Eric to do when he started the company, we're looking at pistols that a lot of people buy, but nobody really wants to work on. Mm-hmm. And some of them are nightmares, and some of them are fairly easy. Like the LCP, you know, you bought our parts, you installed everything. There's maybe 8-9 moving parts in the whole pistol. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not a lot going on in that gun. Whereas you take something like the Bodyguard, where there's more going on internally, to me now, people scoff and I say, well, it's not a lot going on inside, but then I have to step back and remember, yeah, you do this every day. They don't.
Right.
You know, so, but that was the big thing is just because it's a small pocket gun or a small single stack concealed carry, there's no reason that you cannot get the most performance out of the gun, just like you would a race gun or a range gun. And I think what has helped with that side for us business-wise, not only have people graduated into the bigger single-stack, double-stack pistols, but people are expecting more out of their firearms, which for our end of things, yeah, please keep expecting more. We're going to keep producing parts as long as we can, no matter what. You know, case in point, Diamondback, we took a picture of the AM2, which is actually surprisingly a very, I shouldn't, they're probably going to listen to this and be like, you guys are jerks. But it's, you know, when Diamondback first came on the scene, they caught a lot of flack for the DB9 and the DB38. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with a little work, they're great pistols. Straight from the factory, it was hit and miss at first, just like any other new chemistry. And that's the thing I have to try to explain to you is, you get a lot of people who get an opinion about a company, about a brand, about a product, but they don't give it the benefit of the doubt when it's brand new.
Right.
You're always going to have growing pains. Doesn't matter what industry you were in. Look at cars, look at video games, look at the amount of stuff that we now buy that within a few months of buying, there's a patch, be it software, or there's a recall because they need to fix something, be it a vehicle. Mm-hmm. You know, well, we came out with a better way of doing this.
Right.
And so, you know, that part of things makes sense. So we try and stick with some of these guns. You know, the 365, people have been begging us for a trigger. The reason we've waited is because we wanted to let the dust settle some.
Right.
We will be developing a trigger for it, but, you know, when they're in three generations of barrel and slide and the gun's not even been out here, you don't jump into it yet.
Right. Yeah.
You want to make sure...
Well, you complicate things a little bit, too, because I know that 365, it's definitely had its share of growing pains. And then, so, you know, if somebody runs out and gets one of those, and I think it's second nature nowadays for somebody to go out, they, you know, be it new in the box or new to me to go out and get a firearm, and immediately hit the Google foo and start looking for aftermarket stuff. That's a very common thing. And, people run out and get that 360, which is going through growing pains, and then they, hit up some aftermarket sites, and they start installing a bunch of aftermarket parts. Now the question is, am I having trouble because of the aftermarket parts, or am I having trouble because of a factory issue?
Precisely.
So there's definitely a lot of sense in kind of waiting it out and letting that farm be a little more proven from a stock standpoint.
Exactly. That's why we were real impressed with the AM2, because it shows that Diamondback as a company took in customer and gunsmith feedback and actually ran with it. Because you'll run into a lot of the bigger manufacturers that don't want to hear from us, don't want to hear from the aftermarket, that don't want to hear from the customer. By God, what they made is perfect, and that's the end result. You don't need to do anything else to it. Use it the way it is. So it was real refreshing when we posted, hey, we're probably going to make parts for this. Well, Diamondback started following us on Instagram. So on a whim, when we got back from Sean, I just shot him an email like, hey, I saw you guys took interest and we're going to make parts for it. What would you want to see? Well, we got a phone call from their lead engineer that they hired in from Walther to come over to their side. And he has sent us an AM2 and the new DB Gen 4, which I got to say, compared to the first gen, is leaps and bounds, just 10 times better, man. I mean, it's going to be a good seller. Nice. Once they get it to market. But again, that's a company that wants the aftermarket supported. And I think we're starting to see a trend, like you and I talked about at SHOT. We're starting to see a trend with some of the bigger companies, with the exception of a few holdouts, actually getting behind the aftermarket, because in America, the civilian market drives the firearms industry, period, end of story.
Right.
It's not like we're CZ. The reason we have a hard time getting CZs into the country, well, they own a good 40% of the European market for military contracts, police contracts. So they're getting all that over there. We're a secondary afterthought.
Right.
The problem is our own American companies that manufacture here in the States have the same thought process, but they're not anywhere on the level that, say someone like FN. FN's a U.S. company now, but let's be honest, we know they make everything for majority of the militaries around the world. Mm-hmm. If it's a Browning 50, FN has made it in the past 100 years. If it is an AR M16 style platform, M4 style platform, FN has made it and roll stamped Colt's name on it. I mean, we know these things. Mm-hmm. And so it's always refreshing to see a company that has worked past their growing pains and their commitment is to the customer saying, hey, let's work together. Let's see what we can make happen for this. Because more often than not, we run into, hey, look, we're designing parts, we're doing this, we're doing that. How do we get an armor's course? How do we get, because, we want to be able, the only reason we're in business is because they sell product people want to improve. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That was a big thing we ran into with a big company that produces a little pistol called Bodyguard. And we were trying to get into their armor's course, and they knew who we were, so they wouldn't listen.
Right.
And but then you have the transverse of that, where the big wigs at these companies will say, no, we're not doing that, no, we don't want to. Well, the people that answer their tech lines will recommend us to whoever calls in.
Right.
So it's kind of one of those weird relationships that we have with the bigger manufacturers. But with, we got Diamondback sending us guns right now, we got SAR USA, we got this thing with Taurus that we're doing, we've got some other, with the list after SHOT has been pretty big, so I'm trying to remember who all was sending guns and develop parts for. But those are the big three right now that are getting really behind an aftermarket for their customers. And that means a lot, because, whether it be, like you said, the big thing now is you go out, you buy a gun, what's the first thing you do? You want to see what aftermarket parts are made for it. The EMP4 I carry on a daily basis, Springfield Armory. Great 1911 straight out of the box. First thing I did was run back there and see which springs I could cram in there and change the recoil. I mean, I hadn't even shot the thing yet. I'm like, I wonder which one of these Glock flatwound springs will fit in here. Let's look. And start going through, and that's where we got the recoil spring set for the EMP4 that we sell right now. It's personal gun. Let's see what it'll do. And that's what we want to be there for that. And we're getting more and more also into the higher end, because you look at a lot of the stuff now. You'll get a lot of questions. I'll get a lot of questions after this. Glock stuff, what we make is what we make, and that's it. That market is so saturated that we just can't compete with it. Right. You know, that's why our Glock guide rods are $18, because they're much more than that. You're just not going to sell them. Mm-hmm. Or they're $22 with free shipping or something. I don't even remember. I got so many numbers rolling around in my head. They're under $25. I remember that much. Right. That's the cheapest one on the market. Well, yeah, because, I mean, everybody has one. It's cheap for us to produce that.
Right.
And, you know, we've never gotten into the trigger stuff or anything like that, because, you know, and that's why we ended up dropping the guide rods for the 42 and the 43, because they just did not sell. Mm-hmm. You know, we sold a whole bunch of them at first, and then it just dropped off. Because the people that wanted it bought it, and everybody else, usually just because it says perfection on the box,
right,
they just run it the way it is.
Right.
You know, so, you know, the Glock market is
And to their credit, they will. They may not run, you know, as good, I mean, performance-wise, and the trigger pull and the brake and the recoil and, you know, a lot of the other things, but... You know, Glock has done a really good job over the years. It's hard to, whether you're a Glock lover or a Glock hater, it's hard to dispute that, you know, it's a simplistic platform and it just works.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's the Glock is like the AK of pistols.
Right.
It's good at a bunch of stuff, but it's not great at any one single thing.
Right. Yeah, unless you
and it'll run. As long as you don't limp wrist it, you put garbage in it and it will eat it. You could throw rocks inside that thing. If it's got propellant, it'll fire.
Right.
But it's not going to do, you know, that's why Gucci Glocks and certain Gucci striker fires crack me up, because you're paying an extreme premium for a 10% increase in performance, because that's all you can squeeze out of that Glock is about 10%.
Right.
And so that's why we don't do, I mean, we do the normal stuff, guide rods, extended takedown plate, holster, traction grips. But outside of that, and plus at this point, every year there's, you know, some different generation Glock. Internally, they're all pretty much the same, but they're constantly changing cosmetically. So anything you make, say, traction grips for one generation won't work with another.
Right.
And, you know, like the LCP is another key example of that. We used to sell a lot of the Corso Ink mag guts for the LCP. We still sell a lot of mag guts because we do carry other companies' products that we believe in. When I say that, that's products that Eric or myself have tested before we even bring them on our website, because if they're not up to our standards, we're not going to sell it.
Right.
And he eventually just quit making them for the LCP because there are 7 different generations of magazine for the LCP. And so you never knew what you were getting, because you had to look for real obscure markings that were usually on the inside of the mag body. So he had at one point 5 different mag guts for the LCP, and you'd have to do so much homework that customers just quit buying it.
Right.
And so he was like, look, I'm not going to make this anymore. And we were all for that, because it gets to a point where it gets so confusing on, well, I've got this one with this serial number and this mark and that and this, so I need this.
Right.
Your people are not going to go to that extra trouble.
Right. Yeah. Now, you know, not to make anybody out there laugh, but I mean, you guys have you're talking about the high end. On the low end of things, you guys have that rat rod for the high point.
Honestly,
I knew that was coming, but
that thing started out as a joke. Me and Eric were like, I've had this, the story behind my C9 is hilarious too. This goes all the way back to when I still had my FFL in the mid-aughts. Mm-hmm. All right, so I had a guy, it was also when I still worked down at the store, I had a guy come in, drop off his C9, he had taken some of it apart, and I mean, it was sketchy to begin with, just because the dude had straight up, I mean, they were obviously prison tattoos on his arms and stuff. I'm like, I don't think you're going to be getting this back. Dude disappears for 2 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then he comes back in on my 2 week notice, and he's like, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, at this point, we're going to have to do a background check. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, he just stared at me. Didn't really say anything. And I was like, yeah, that's what I thought. And he was like, well, I can't do it today, and disappeared, never came back.
Right. So
it was in my logs when I eventually turned in my FFL when it expired, and I was done doing it on my own, because at that point I was working for Eric too. It was just too much to keep up with. So it became mine. Right. And one day we were sitting around, and we've always had people ask us for High Point parts. Now,
wow, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mostly for the carbines, but I liken it to this. There are people around the country that either A, are just not into guns, or B, they can't afford something nice right off the bat. They can't just walk in and drop $600 on a gun.
Sure.
You know? And I get that. For new gun owners, I equated it to being a teenager and you just bought a Honda Civic, you know, or a CRX. You remember the CRXs? Remember those were like the thing that ricers used to buy? And what's the first thing you do? You go and buy a bunch of parts to put in your $600 car. Because, you know, that's what you do when you're a teenager or a young adult. It's your first car. Well, I'm going to pimp it out.
Right.
Well, it's the same thing with a High Point. Why not make it run better? You know, could it blow up in your hand? It may. I've seen some that have. Usually, though, they leave out the part where they're running something way too hot to be
right.
putting that gun.
Right.
But, I mean, the thing about it is, and you'll see, like, the Pew Pew channel is one of our brand ambassadors, and he's proof in the pudding. The tool doesn't matter. The training does. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got videos of him when we did the Hypezi project with him. This was pre-rat rod. This is while we were in the middle of designing the rat rod. Mm-hmm. And sent it in. We milled it for an optic. And I got weapon stencils to do a custom Old English. It said Hypezi on it. Mm-hmm. And we did front slide serrations. We stripped it down. I did the lettering first and then did black Cerakote over it. So it looked like it came from the factory that way. And people ate it up, man. You got Drew Hopkins. He has our rat rod in his. And these are both guys that train a lot and prove that the tool does not matter. The person matters. Because these are both guys that can tag stuff with their C9s at 50, 60 yards on steel, run a complete course of fire without a problem. And that's the thing with the High Point. It will run.
Right.
You know? Yeah, they get a bad rap. Yeah, it's a $170 gun. I get that part of it.
And ugly, ugly, ugly.
Ugly, ugly. Fugly would be a better word,
right.
But it's,
right.
But they run.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the people that's all they can afford, why shouldn't they have an option? You know, and it's a steady seller.
Yeah.
And the pistol, it makes a big difference. The next run of rat rods, we're changing a couple things on them to where they'll fit all the pistols and all the carbines.
Okay, nice.
Because we got the 10 millimeter carbine in, which if you get your chance to get your hands on one,
oh, yeah.
That thing is a
They're
ball
nice.
Of fun to shoot.
Yes.
And we noticed that the shelf isn't molded in to that tactical stock, and it's not on the 45 or the 40 version either. It's only on the 9 and 380 versions that it has that shelf for the stock.
Mm-hmm.
So we changed the design some, and the ones for the carbine are also going to come with a longer screw, because now the over travel stop will actually hit the magazine is what it will do.
Wow, okay.
To stop the over travel, because that's the only way you can stop it.
Right.
Which I'm sure a lot of people go, dumb design. I'm like, well, don't hold your trigger back while you're jamming a mag in, and you'll be fine.
Right.
You know.
Right. I don't know why you
leaps of
that.
Logic.
Don't know why you would do that anyway, but sure.
Yeah. You'd be amazed. Trust me. You'd be amazed. I've decided one day when I retire, I'm going to write a book, and it's going to be from the gunsmith's desk, and it's just going to be emails. I'm going to leave out everybody's names. you know, but it'll just be the things I get in email and I talk to people about, and you would be amazed the things you hear come out of people's mouths sometimes or read on your screen, like, wait, what did you just say? And we had a elderly couple buy one of our Micro 9 triggers and took it to a gunsmith to have it installed, and I don't think it was done correctly just by the way that it was worded, because that's another I go off on rants. If I'm ranting, just stop me and we'll get back on subject. But this is a big one that we have, is quote unquote gunsmiths in this industry. It's usually a running joke. What they're majority of the time, they're not actual gunsmiths. They're just people that have changed some Glock connectors and put on a 10/22 stock every now and again.
Sure. So it holds true. The mechanic world's exactly the same. You know, same.
Yeah, exactly. What you guys would call shade tree mechanics.
Right.
And so you run into that. Well, we had this elderly couple. They wanted a Micro 9. They bought our Crusader trigger. Took it to this guy, install it. And this is what he said the malfunction was. Keeping in mind, this is not a malfunction, and nor can I make it happen to any test gun, whether it be Micro 9, Micro 380, 938, to any, the Crusader, all those guns are pretty much internally the exact same. Mm-hmm. He said, the safety won't go on with the hammer down.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a single action pistol. Why would you, A, want to turn the safety on with the hammer down, meaning you can't use the gun, and B, the safety goes on with the hammer down regardless, because it's just an interference safety on those models. It literally, there's a little nub that sticks up, and when you flip the safety on, it just blocks the hammer from moving. That's all it does.
Right.
And as you've seen from the install videos, literally when you're taking it apart, you just swing the safety up and it pulls straight out. That's all it is. And so we sent it to Kimber and they said it was your trigger and this, that, and the other. Problem with the whole thing was we've already sent 4 of our triggers to Kimber on their request, right, from their East Coast rep that handles all of the East Coast accounts. Mm-hmm. And he loves them. So I was like, no, that's not. And I had to explain how everything worked, and they were just adamant. But that's just one of the things I'll hear. You know, we'll have people try and take our parts and parts from other guns and make them work in a gun that it's not supposed to. I mean, you'd be amazed. We've had people buy, when we still had the Solomon kit, buy it thinking it went in their LCP. We get people who still to this day buy LCP parts thinking they work in their LC9. Wow. Or their LC380. I mean, you run into a lot of stuff. And a lot of it comes from just the simple fact, it's normally new gun owners and people who just don't understand that internally every gun is different. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's got different designs.
Right.
But yeah, no, you'd be amazed. Some of the things, it would make a lot of people belly laugh, some of the things I hear.
Right. Now, with the Taurus thing you mentioned earlier, can you talk about that any at all?
I can. We have been featured in American Handgunner before. Will, Dobbs, Dabbs, I always forget how to say which one it is, wrote an article up on our Santiago kit for the Bodyguard. And the way that came about is we had a booth at SHOT Show in 2017. And I met him and Roy on the shuttle at McCarran that takes you out to the... was it McCarran? I think maybe he flew out of Atlanta with us. Either way, we were on one of the shuttles that runs at the airport, whether it be the bus shuttle to the rental car, or might have been the shuttle in Atlanta that runs between terminals. Mm-hmm. But he just happened to look over. Me and my wife were sitting there, and, you know, I've got all my assault packs and stuff that I've collected throughout the years, and it's easier to travel with that. I had on one of my work shirts, and he's like, so are you going to SHOT Show? And I said, yeah. So what do you do? He said, well, now I don't, me being me, I just don't read magazines anymore.
Right.
You know, I've got a rather large family, and just don't have time. If it's not on my, if it's not a book or a magazine I can download on the iPad, I tend to not know anything. And so when he said his name, it kind of like there was tickling at the back of my head, like, right. That's familiar.
Right.
And then he hands me his card, and he hands me an American Handgunner magazine. I'm like, oh, I made the connection. I gave him my card, and I said, well, here's our booth number if you want to come by and see something. Mm-hmm. He said, well, what are you guys known for? I said, right now, the biggest seller we have is our Santiago kit for the bodyguard. And I went through and explained to him what it did, how it removes, you know, good percent, 35 to 50% of the travel, depending on the tolerances of your gun. We're smoothing it up, crisping up the trigger, this. Well, him and Will came by and they pulled, you know, when you have a booth, you can bring firearms as long as they're rendered unserviceable. You bring them, let people get a feel. And when Will pulled the trigger on that, he gave me his card and he said, I'll be sending mine in 2 weeks. And I said, okay. Cool. And ever since then, we've had a pretty good working relationship with Roy and Will both. Well, we were at SHOT this year. FMC Publications had a booth set up, and we wanted to stop by and see Roy and talk to him. And we got to talking to him, and he's like, you know, you guys do all the niche stuff, because Eric likes to tell the bigger guys when we're working with them, you know, you guys make the guns for everyone. We make the parts that the 10,000 want. Mm-hmm. We're the niche. We make the parts for the people that want that. And so Roy always thinks of us when he comes up with oddball stuff now. And he's like, you know, I've got Taurus just sent me these two, Raging Judge and a 4-inch 44 mag, the M444. Mm-hmm. And he said, I get hundreds of emails, letters, just correspondent in general, of Taurus revolver owners wanting parts. And, you know, outside of the M85, nobody really makes parts for any Taurus revolver. And so he asked us if we wanted to tackle it. And of course, we were like, well, yeah. I mean, that's another market to get into. And, you know, Taurus revolvers, you know, a lot of people have issues with their semi-autos, which got some insider knowledge on that I can't exactly share right now. But the semi-autos are going to be tightening up and getting a lot better, because I can't tell where or anything, but all semi-auto manufacturing is going to be done in America from now on. Wow. By the end of this year for Taurus pistols. They'll still make the revolvers in Brazil, but all the semi-auto stuff is going to be made here in the States.
Interesting.
That was good to hear. I was like, oh, okay, good. But the revolvers have always been great. They've always made great revolvers, mostly because that's what they started out making. Mm-hmm. And, so we're like, sure, what is it? And then he tells us, and we're like, oh, big guns. Okay, yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, why not? So we get back, I email him, and he sends them out. He gave us this whole list of rules. Neither of us are supposed to know what the other is doing, which is kind of hard since we sit like 10 feet apart from each other in the office, and our benches are right next to each other. But we're going to be developing some springs to start with. But for these two, we're going to go full bore. I'm working on getting some mold guns so we can start making holsters for them, both hunting and carry holsters. Because the M44, it's the right size if you're going to carry a revolver, being a 4-inch. Mm-hmm. It's the right size for carry. And the 6.5-inch Raging Bull, I mean, it's a perfect hunting pistol. I mean, you're shooting a 44 mag, and at the cost of the revolver and custom work put into it, you're still going to come well under the cost of, say, a Model 29. Mm-hmm. Right. And you're paying that for the Model 29 because you're paying for a name and the fact that it was in 3 movies.
Right.
And our big thing around here, you know, if you can duck the cost and still get the same performance, why would you not do that? So yeah, exactly. It's going to be pretty exciting. We're looking at doing some hunter friendly coatings on the 6.5, and I'm looking at doing some micro slick and stuff on the inside for a carry job, since it would be more of a carry pistol. But we named them immediately. You know, being in the South like we are, bootlegging is a big deal around here, and there for a while. Eric was actually about to open a distillery And we had gone through the process and the paperwork and everything, but at the same time, we live in a controlled state. 20 other distilleries opened around us, so it kind of put the kibosh on that, because you're like, oh, well, crap. Because in a controlled state, you can't just sell to whoever. You can only sell to the ABC board.
Right.
And they have to buy, but they only have to buy a certain amount. And after that amount, they don't have to buy again. So
right.
You do a one run and done. But we're calling the Raging Bull, and it will be the Bourbon Bully. Mm-hmm. And mine that I'm doing is the Bootlegger.
Okay. Interesting.
So we're going to get one of the local laser engraving companies to do some crazy laser engraving, put the names on them. And I'm contemplating, because we have a French Bulldog for a shop dog running around, maybe getting a still of her face done on them just to have the matching bullies.
Right.
Yeah, a little play on words. But Taurus is real excited. Roy is super excited. And we're real excited because, it's like I said, it's another market for us to show that, you know, there's no reason you can't have performance.
Right.
And especially for people in commie states like California, Massachusetts, Illinois, New Jersey, the states that gun control laws are getting tighter and tighter, even though it's not doing anything to curb crime.
Sure.
Washington State being a good example of basically their assault weapons ban is semi-automatic firearms, period.
Yes.
If it's semi-automatic, they're banning it. Well, any law-abiding citizen is going to have to go to revolvers or something like that. Revolvers haven't been a big deal in 200 years. I mean, they've always been there. You've had movies where you got like Death Wish with Wilby,
right.
The Wildy. You know, you got Dirty Harry with the Model 29, and so on and so forth. But all in all, revolvers don't make up a big portion of firearm sales anymore. And I think we're going to see a big resurgence in that in some of these states where it's impossible to get a decent semi-automatic firearm anymore.
Right.
So there's no reason those people shouldn't have, you know, access to performance parts as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, is this the first, I don't remember you guys doing anything for revolvers in the past? Is this the first foray, or have y'all tinkered around with that, with the revolvers in the past?
We've done for customers like one-off things, but we've never mass produced something. So it'll be a first for revolver mass production of parts.
Okay, cool.
Most of the, you know, we do trigger jobs and things like that, and that's, I don't want to say easy and make it sound that way. It's
right.
You know, it's one-offs are easier to do because usually we're not having to make springs and things from scratch. You can find that stuff already, and as long as you understand the mechanics and stoning and polishing and how it affects the way things interface, mm-hmm. you're good. This right here, this will be all brand new revolver stuff, because we're sending the springs off to one of our spring makers to get different rate springs made, so double and single action trigger pull can be fine tuned. Possibly later down the line, a trigger. Right now, I think we're going to stick with these, but on defensive gun, because I imagine we'll start getting a lot more interest in the revolver stuff once this comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll probably start looking at LCRs, the Taurus 85s, J frames, things of that nature that are still defensive carries.
Mm-hmm.
That we can do spring kits, triggers, things like that for.
Interesting. Yeah, that's very cool. A lot of people, I'm sure, are going to be looking for that. We are unfortunately at our time break here, Brandon. So if you would finish up, kind of tell everybody how they can take a look at the products, get a hold of you guys if they have any questions, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, the easiest way, if you've got questions, there's two ways to do it. You can email me directly at tech, that's Tango Echo Charlie Hotel, at GallowayPrecision.com. Or if you're on the website and you have a particular question about a product you're looking at, there'll be an Ask a Question button on the listing. Click on that. The questions come directly to me. You can follow us on social media at Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Gunstreamer, and Vimeo, all under Galloway Precision. I just went completely blank there for a second.
It happened, unfortunately.
But yeah, I handling all the Facebook stuff. You can reach me on Messenger, but it, pricing and things like that, it's always better to contact me via email, because there's a lot of stuff that I have pre-done responses, so I can send it out real quick. But yeah, pretty much any selling platform we're on, you can ask us questions through. So eBay, Amazon, and our website, any of the social media. And you can email me directly.
Very good. And again, Brandon, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a good time.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertech.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertech. Have a great weekend.